Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes. Welcome, everybody, to this issue of the Mountain Grapevine Radio Show here in Madison County. On the telephone today, we have Bob Hamilton, the ABC Commission Administrator, and Agnes Stevens, the Public Affairs Director with the North Carolina Alcoholic Beverage Control Commission in Raleigh, North Carolina. One of the things that we want to do before we get started here is sort of give us a little bit of background about you folks, where you came from, and what exactly is it that you do now?
This is Bob. I have worked with the Commission both in a full-time role and as a contractor for about 5.5 years. Previous to that, I used to be the executive director of the Auctioneer License Board of the state of North Carolina and had many other different jobs previous to those, but that's basically my background. And obviously, I administer the day-to-day operations for the ABC Commission, who is comprised of a chairman and two commissioners that are appointed by the governor of the state. Our chairman is a full-time paid position, so ultimately the chairman and the two commissioners have final say-so over decisions with this commission.
Now, the assumption is, Bob, that those people have some experience in the fields of the things that they're sort of watching and regulating?
You don't usually find that in boards and commissions of this type. You'll generally only find that in an occupational licensing board, such as an auctioneer licensing board, where they're mandated to have certain licensees as board members.
If someone were to come against some kind of, you know, barrier or regulation or something, where would that board, the chairman and the two commissioners, get involved?
Basically, the entire process begins with, if there is a issue with a violation, the commission uses both ALE, which is the North Carolina Alcohol Law Enforcement, and they also use local ABC officers across the state as the enforcement entities. They do all the inspections and they write violation reports. Those are provided to our legal staff here at the commission. That our legal staff then reviews those violations just as a DA would under criminal law, and this would be administrative law. And at that point, they would, per the requirements of General Statute 150B, they would try to negotiate with the permittee in reference to those violations. If the permittee did not want to negotiate a settlement, then it would go to a hearing, which is with the Office of Administrative Hearings, and an administrative law judge would hear the case and make a decision on that case based on the facts. At that point, that information would come back to the commission, and the commission would ratify the proposed decision by the judge. As far as if there was a suspension, they would set the dates of when that suspension would occur, and if there were fine penalties, when those fines had to be paid. If the legal division does settle with the permittee, then at that point they have a signed settlement statement that goes before our commission. Our commission will decide whether to ratify the settlement agreement. And if they do, then obviously that violation is complete and the process is complete on that.
Well, getting in the front end of that, are you involved at all on the licensing process?
We are absolutely involved in the licensing process. We license approximately 17,000 different retail locations and commercial businesses across the state. This includes everything from convenience stores, grocery stores, wineries, distilleries, breweries, restaurants, private clubs. Depending on you know, how they're set up. We also do special one-time permits in certain situations and multiple other different permits. So we handle all the permitting for the entire state as it relates to the possession, the manufacture, and the sales of alcohol.
Help me understand something here. We've got a number of people here are putting in vineyards. Last year we had two new commercial vineyards going in. This year we have planned to help our local farmers put in three more commercial vineyards here in the mountains. And it'll be probably 6 years, maybe 7 years before they get to the point where they're producing commercial quantities of grapes that they can start to do something with. And of course, you know, the doing something with is something that people look forward to and have to do some planning for. It can be anything from making juice to preserves, pies. Some of the stuff will get involved with the nutraceutical industry where they start doing extraction from various polyphenols and so forth from the seeds and skins. But one of the things that we're very interested in here is also looking at the value-added products that go into the alcoholic side of things. So if someone were listening to the radio show and they say, okay, I know that 3 years from now, 4 years from now, 2 years from now, whatever, I'm going to have a winery. What would be the first step that these people would take in order to become a licensed winery here in Western North Carolina?
First thing they need to do is they need to get in touch with the TTB and get their federal permits first. And once they have obtained those federal permits, our process is less time consuming. Basically, they fill out an application here, provide all the documentation with that application, and actually if they walk in on a regular business day before 3 o'clock, they can walk out with a temporary permit and be operational by nightfall.
Wow, that's pretty fast.
Absolutely.
Is the TTB, the federal permitting side of things, what typically takes so long?
We aren't involved in that process, so I would dare say that I wouldn't comment on how long the process is, but I would say that it would take more than one day.
Okay, because I know in talking to wineries and cideries and meaderies here in the western area that there have been some complaints about just how long it takes to go through this whole process. I, for one, didn't know that there were two separate processes we had to do, one with the federal, one with the state. So, hey, we've learned something new, which is good for the radio audience. Well, let's go back on to the kinds of stuff we do here. All right, so if I walk in and have everything in order, I've done my TTB federal permitting stuff, and I can walk out that day with my temporary. What does it take to go from a temporary to the permanent?
Basically, what happens is when we issue a temporary permit, it's basically a conditional permit. And that's with the understanding that when people walk out, that we have to follow up with an investigation of the applicant's information. And so that process will take a length of time. Usually, one of the longer lengths is the state and federal government returning the fingerprint background information to make sure that the people under the law qualify as far as not having particular criminal convictions in their past. So there is that process there of our investigation, which takes a certain amount of time. And then,
Bob, excuse me for interrupting. Just as a general idea, what would be a range of that time? You know, 2 days to 5 months, you know, roughly.
Generally, those people will be on a temporary permit for up to 6 months.
Okay.
Especially if they don't have any violations during that time period. Obviously, with wineries and other commercial permittees, we don't generally have as much problems with them in reference to violations, whereas you might find a convenience stores or restaurants or private clubs that have obviously a much greater opportunity of selling to an underage or serving to an intoxicated person or some of the other violations that are health, safety, and welfare. So the fact is, when they walk out with their temporary permit, they have all the abilities that a permanent permittee has. The only difference is that a permanent permittee, if they have violations, the processes for handling those violations are different than a temporary permittee. Because a temporary permittee has received a temporary permit, that permit can be suspended or it can be revoked much easier than a permanent permittee. So during that time period, we're evaluating that business to make sure that they are going to comply with the laws in the future. And from that point, you know, like I said, they can operate. They have all the operational abilities of a permanent permittee.
Okay, well, Bob, at this point in time, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Hang on, folks.
Today's program is being brought to you by Hermes Hiking Pole Pedometer. Hermie Halverson lives in Hot Springs, about 14 miles west of Marshall, North Carolina. His cabin is a few yards off the Appalachian Trail. Over the years, he has seen hundreds of hikers passing by his place. He has also met a few now and then in his favorite watering hole in downtown Hot Springs. Their biggest complaint was they can't accurately gauge how far they've hiked along the trail. Most of them wear a pedometer that tells them how many steps they've taken, but it doesn't tell them how far they have walked in any particular hiking trip. Hermie works in the Walmart in Weaverville and was a greeter, and he uses a handheld counter to keep track of how many people enter and leave the store. One day he had the bright idea about making a hiking stick he could sell to all of the hikers along the Appalachian Trail. He bought a hand counter and took it home to his workshop out behind his outhouse. There he disassembled the old wind-up clock he found at the recycle center. He made a special slip disc so it would only punch his handheld counter once when it had been ratcheted 2,000 times. He had calculated that the average person steps about 32 inches to the handheld counter indicated 1 and was activated 2,000 times, or exactly 1 mile. He hollowed out a hiking pole and placed a spring-loaded shaft through a hole in the bottom of the hiking stick. Every time the pole hit the ground, it would increment 1 notch until it was activated 2,000 times, and the hand counter mounted on top of the pole would show 1 mile. He began demonstrating his hiking pole pedometer to hikers, and they loved it. Before long, everyone was using Hermie's hiking pole pedometer. Hermie had to hire a few part-time workers to keep up with the business. Hermie adds a note of caution. If you use your hiking pole pedometer for poking at snakes and spiders, it won't give you an accurate distance on your hike. Hermie's hiking pole pedometer is another special product made in the good old U.S. of A. here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can buy Hermie's hiking pole pedometer at Hermie's Hiking Lodge just off the Appalachian Trail or at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall for only $1.298. And now back to our regular program.
Welcome back, everybody. We've been on the phone with Bob Hamilton, the ABC Commission Administrator, and Agnes Stevens, the Public Affairs Director for the North Carolina Alcoholic Beverage Control Commission in Raleigh, North Carolina. We've been discussing a whole series of things that's quite interesting for us here in the mountains who are looking at getting in some value-added products that have to do with alcohol. Okay, is there a difference, Bob, between, say, an individual or an LLC or an S1 corporation applying for the permits? Because there have been some conversations here about having like a cooperative winery.
You actually put two different points in there, and let me make sure that I answer those two separately. Under the state law and under the ABC laws, a person is what gets a permit in our state. And a person is defined as multiple different types of entities. And that can be an individual, that can be a partnership, that can be an LLC, that can be a corporation. It can be multiple other variants of those. But it's as defined, all of those are a person. And so there are different requirements in that application process that, you know, basically they need to look at our statute. There, it's very specific of what is required if you're an LLC, what is required if you're a corporation, what is required if you're an individual, and what, and that our website does provide information for them to get answers without actually having to make a lot of calls to our office. If they will review our website, our website's address is abc.nc.gov. abc.nc.gov. And there's a wealth of information on there that people typically can review in reference to the permitting process, what forms they actually need, what requirements they need in reference to being different types of persons. And then I'll get to your last statement about cooperatives. What is your definition of a cooperative?
We've been watching a cooperative that didn't do very well. In fact, they closed it down, I think, about a year or two ago up in, I think it was near Boone. The New River Winery up there, I think they started, this is secondhand information, but I have a lot of friends up there. They told me that they had started out with maybe, 20 or 30 different people who went together and formed a cooperative winery. There were a number of vineyards who were providing grapes for the organization. They had the winery permitted. They were selling wine for a couple of years. And they ran into some operational issues with people not wanting to do their share of the work and this, that, and the other. But it's really something that's unique for us here in the mountains. We have small vineyards. The average size vineyard in the state of North Carolina tends to be 4 acres. And if you've got a 4-acre vineyard here in the mountains, that's a big vineyard. Most of them are like 1 or 2 acres. So you really can't get enough grapes out of one of those small vineyards to go do something. But as a cooperative, we could. We could have 10 small vineyards producing enough grapes to make it interesting for a cooperative winery to justify having the equipment to process the grapes from a number of smaller vineyard owners.
I think the what most likely has to be looked at is under the statute, the authorization for a winery permit, and what it allows for in that regard, because it does have stipulations within it that specify where these grapes have to come from. And it does give some allowances for startup wineries who obviously don't have grapes ready. And that's very specific, and I dare say that I would, our radio interview, provide all that information, because the questions that you're asking, I could take days to answer. But if they were to go to our statute and go to North Carolina General Statute 18B-1101, that would provide them the authorization for an unfortified winery permit and give them information on where the grapes have to come from. As far as the cooperative, we obviously, like I stated before, a person is also defined as a partnership. So there are ways for, one to infinity number of people combined to hold a permit. So that's not the issue. The issue is the winery regulation and whether multiple addresses can be one winery.
We've got some people listening in who are going to be trying to work through this and figure out where to go and how to do this. Is there any difference in the licensing process for a cidery versus a meadery versus a winery?
A cider by the federal government is wine. And so we treat cider as wine. So it's the exact same process. I believe mead is a wine also.
Yeah, it's honey wine.
I'm almost positive that's a wine also. It's not a malt beverage. So,
okay.
And we do have permitted mead wineries.
So, Bob, let's jump on to the fortified wine thing. What's different about that license from the regular winery license?
Well, as far as getting the license, the permit, there's no difference. It's the same process, getting your TTB permits first and then coming to the North Carolina ABC Commission, either via mail or walk-in to get your permit. As far as the difference in definitions, the main difference in the definition is that an unfortified wine is generally wines that are 16% or less alcohol by volume. And then the fortified wine is anything above 16% up to 24% alcohol by volume. And basically, that's the main difference between the two. They both have requirements that grapes or other different types of fruits have to be used to produce it, and it has to be, I believe, fermented.
Why would there be a different kind of licensing process for fortified wines as opposed to regular wines? Is there something magic about the 16% number?
Obviously, the legislature decided at one point that there was a difference between the two. North Carolina has always been somewhat had different scales of alcohol. Different scales being the malt beverage used to be the lowest amount of alcohol, unfortified wine being the next amount of alcohol by volume, then fortified wine, then spirituous liquor. And it has stayed that way over time, albeit the malt beverages several years ago increased their alcohol by volume up to 15%, which obviously makes it almost somewhat identical to fortified wine's alcohol content. But basically, that's how the state has always looked at the different ones. And because of that, they have put different requirements on each of those, where you'll see that malt beverages and unfortified wine have more freedoms around the state than fortified wine and spirituous liquor. Basically, you can take beer and wine basically anywhere in the state. Obviously, if you're on somebody's property, you have to have their permission to be there. Spirituous liquor is the most strict in that it requires you to only allow it in your home, allow it at your friend's home with their permission, or a private business that is not open to the public. And then there are certain other places that it can be. Obviously, you can have it in your transport from an ABC store to your home or wherever you're going to. But within all that, it's very much more strict than you'll find with the unfortified wine and the malt beverage. Fortified wine is treated very similarly to the spirituous liquor in that your transportation allowances and your purchase allowances are identical to the spirituous liquor.
The spirituous liquor, you're talking primarily the distilleries?
That's correct.
I was born and raised in the mountains of West Virginia. Up there, they laugh all the time. They call me a Mountain William, which is an educated hillbilly. So I grew up with relatives who were making beer, making wine. One of them was actually making moonshine. And lived in Minnesota for many years and also in Arizona. And there, I was also involved in the wine industry somewhat and got to be familiar with the different kinds of laws and so forth that surround it. But North Carolina has some interesting ones. For example, we have some transportation licensing things here that I haven't seen in some other states. You want to talk a little bit about the transportation licenses and why they're required for different things?
Basically, it's so that law enforcement can keep up with alcohol that's on the roads and making sure that you're not getting, possibly, you're not having or using any non-tax paid liquors or other alcohol. The purchase transportation forms are don't cost anything. It's just a form that's completed either at an ABC store if you're buying spirituous liquor, or say at a grocery store or a convenience store if you're buying over the minimum amount can be purchased and transported without that permit. And so it's just a way of being able to make sure that that amount of alcohol was actually purchased in North Carolina and not being transported over state line.
Just as a question, if I were to go to the local ABC store, I think our closest one is over in Weaverville, would I need a transportation license if I were to buy some one bottle over a case or three cases or 20 cases, or is there a number like that for retail customers?
I think it's 8 liters. I think anything over 8 liters, you would have to have a purchase transportation form, and the ABC store would have those on hand, and basically you fill out your part, they fill out their part, they keep a copy, and you keep a copy. And if you got stopped on the road and law enforcement asks you about the liquor, you just show them your form, and they'd be fine with that.
That is really interesting. I had no idea that that worked that way. Moving on to another aspect of the spirituous liquor, grapes, as you know, provide a great source of alcohol for distilleries. And throughout Italy, anything that's made from, you know, the alcohol beverages that are made from grapes is called grappa, as opposed to moonshine, which comes from corn. So if somebody were to take a look at doing that kind of thing here, there's a special license for that, right? Is there a minimum or a maximum on those licenses for the distilleries?
Well, first of all, I'm not completely understanding of your terminology. I don't have the background, obviously, that you do. So I don't know that I would feel comfortable in answering your question, because I really don't understand what you're asking. You just told me that there was a particular permit for Gruppo, and we have no terminology in North Carolina for Gruppo.
It's Grappa, G-R-A-P-P-A, Grappa.
It doesn't matter how it's pronounced. We don't have a permit for Grappa. We have permits for a winery, unfortified winery. We have a permit for a fortified winery. We have permits for distilleries, and we have permits for malt beverage.
Okay, so this would fall under the spirituous liquor.
I don't know, because I don't completely understand this particular product that you're stating. It would have to meet the definition of a distilled product, both through the federal government and through our state, for it to be getting a North Carolina distillery permit.
Fair enough. I had also heard through some local contacts here in the Asheville area that North Carolina also is different in that they have like a 10-gallon exception for cultural purposes for people who live in North Carolina, that they're allowed to distill some few gallons of something per year without a necessity of a permit?
That's absolutely incorrect. The only thing that people in North Carolina can do as citizens in their own homes is to manufacture or brew beer and manufacture wine for their own consumption and for their family and friends. They cannot provide that wine or beer to the public. And distilled products are totally illegal to be manufactured without a distillery permit. You cannot make, that's why you see the Moonshiner show, because it's totally illegal to make distilled products in North Carolina or most of the states in the nation without a distillery permit.
Yeah, that's been the way it has every place I've lived. And also they have the 100-gallon to 200-gallon wine and beer compensation for a family. Well, if it's a single adult, it's 100 gallons.
In North Carolina, we have absolutely no minimum on what you can make for yourself as far as beer and wine. So every state, that's the way this nation was put together through the Constitution of the United States, is that each state has the ability to make their own laws, to make their laws stricter, obviously, than the Constitution allows for. And you'll find that in many different states. So North Carolina in itself is a state by itself and has their own legislature and makes their own laws. So I would dare say that you would take most any state's laws and be able to overlap it over another state's laws, because there's so many different legislators and different lines of thinking through those legislators.
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities, but there are quite some differences too that I know, because I've been involved with them, and I said in several different states. But at this point in time, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Hang on, folks.
Today's program is being brought to you by Billy Farchackle's Boot Jack. I own a small farm here in Madison County. Getting up at the crack of dawn every day to feed the animals is part of the daily farm routine around here. But coming back to the house on a rainy day after chores means coming back with a lot of mud on your work boots. And getting your boots off with all that mud on them can be a messy proposition, especially if you're standing inside the kitchen door. Billy Farchackle had thought about this and decided to make something that would help get his boots off without getting mud all over his hands. He had seen a movie about an English horse trainer and had a special gadget for taking off his boots on his front porch. So Billy began experimenting with several designs. He reckoned that it must be something like a large upside-down bottle opener. Stick your boot heel in the hole and hold your boot while you pulled your foot out of the boot. After a dozen or so failures, he finally got the right size and shape. He added a base to help hold it steady while standing on it with the other foot. Now Billy could easily and without use of his hands remove his muddy boots on the back porch. He had solved the problem. I saw it one day while I was visiting and asked him to make one for me. He agreed, and soon he was making Billy Farchackle's boot jacks for sale for farmers all over the county. He's thinking of going national and getting a website for his product. A word of warning, though, Billy tells me that Joel Crudsworth got his feet tangled up on his boot jack after he had one snort too many of moonshine. He broke his nose when he fell on a rocking chair on his back porch. Billy Farchackle's boot jack is another quality product made in the good old U.S. of A. here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can buy Billy Farchackle's boot jack for $1.298 at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall. And now back to our regular program.
We've been on the phone with Bob Hamilton and Agnes Stevens for the North Carolina Alcoholic Beverage Control Commission in Raleigh, North Carolina. Does the ABC offer some kind of training, workshops, practical applications, this sort of thing from time to time for people who would be interested in getting into either a distillery or a winery of some sort?
No, we don't have any classes on that. There are many local colleges, both community colleges and I think some of the at least some of the state schools that provide classes of that nature. We do provide classes in reference to sellers, servers of alcohol to assist them with understanding what their requirements are in selling and serving alcohol across the state. We do offer and we've done this several times, we will provide a person to an association. The Brewers Guild, we have been to more than one of their meetings. We've been to the Asheville Beer, I think it's the Asheville Brewery Alliance. We've been to several different associations and spoke and answered questions as it relates to permits, what you can do with your permit, what you can do with a retail permit. And so we don't have any set classes, but if a person's wanting to learn the process of making wine commercially or beer commercially, that's better for them to seek out their local college or community college.
Well, I'm very familiar with the community college system here as well as some other states. Before I moved here from Arizona, I used to teach these kinds of classes at the local community colleges. So the adult educational stuff was quite popular there and certainly a good way to get that done. Let's talk for a moment about, you mentioned earlier something about a one-time permit. People are confused, and that varies also from state to state. How does the one-time permit work here, and what kinds of things would we apply for one?
There are about five or six different scenarios where an entity can apply for a special one-time permit, and that allows for either the sale or the service of alcohol. One of those has to do with something that is in reference to a legal process, whether it be a bankruptcy, whether it be a court order, whether it be deceased state sale that's in probate, things of that nature. A special one-time permit can be obtained to obviously get rid of that alcohol under that legal process. The second one is for a nonprofit to be able to get a special one-time permit to sell their product for one of their events, and this can't, a nonprofit can't get it to do an event for a commercial entity. It basically has to be a nonprofit's event as a fundraiser for that nonprofit. The third way is for if a retail establishment is going out of business, they can get a special one-time permit to sell their liquor, beer, and wine to another permitted retail establishment. The fourth scenario is that a collector of wine or decorative spirituous liquor decanters can get a permit to either bring those into the state or to sell that collection. In a lot of cases, what you'll see is the military who are over in Europe that want to come back stateside with their living goods will get one of those permits so they can bring back their collection of wine that they've obtained over there. The fifth and last scenario is where a unit of local government or a nonprofit organization or a political organization can get a permit, special one-time permit, to do an event with ticket sales. And basically, you pay so much and then you receive a certain amount of alcohol when you were there if you're of age. So those are the five scenarios.
What happens if somebody, I'm just, again, trying to help our audience understand some things, because we have a lot of wine collectors over. If somebody dies here and they have an estate left over from, he's been collecting wine for 20 years and it's sort of valuable what he's got now, what kind of a license would they be able to get to sell and liquidate the estate?
Obviously, that would be the first one that I mentioned, which would be a special one time with the scenario that it was an estate sale on for a deceased person, and basically the estate would get the permit, and that would allow them to sell whatever they had, whether it's beer, wine, or spirituous liquor. It doesn't matter whether it's a collection or not. It's part of their total liquidation of their property.
Okay, so that one-time permit, it would include that particular event. Okay. All right. I'd like to ask you another question or two. It has to do with new kinds of products. When we talked earlier about grappa, that was a term that you were unfamiliar with, and I also like to talk about medicinal alcohol. What would be the process that people could go to in order to have the ability to make these new products?
Well, let's speak first of medicinal and tinctures and things of that nature. There are exemptions within the law for certain alcohols to be used without any type of permit. And within that, tinctures, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but tinctures are a spirituous liquor and a manufacturer of flavors or flavoring extracts that are unfit for beverage use. We only regulate alcohol that's for beverage use. So if it's non-potable, just like, say, a vanilla extract, where basically if you were going to get drunk off of vanilla extract, if you drank enough of it, you'd probably throw up before you got to the point that you were intoxicated. There's tinctures, to my knowledge, are based the same way. Generally speaking, it's how the TTB first views it. If the TTB first views that they have to have a alcohol permit from them as a winery, a distillery, a brewery, then most likely they're going to have to get a permit from us. But if they're taking alcohol and they're buying, they go to the liquor store and they buy some vodka, and then they're putting things into it, and it's coming out, and you cannot drink it because it will make you sick, but you would rub it on your body or do other things with it, that the TTB doesn't view it as requiring a alcohol permit. per se, then you're probably not going to need a permit here.
Well, from my experience, at least, the medicinal alcohol that's used here in the mountains with the various types of natural products, it is something that is used in small concentrations. For example, you've probably seen these little tiny bottles about 3 or 4 inches high with a little dropper arrangement in there. That's typically the way they're made, and they're flavored with different kinds of things. But the alcohol that they've been buying comes from, like I said, out in California and Oregon, that is made from grain, and it's organic. And what they've discovered is that people with celiac disease, which is they're allergic to wheat products and wheat things, can't use that type of alcohol in any of their tinctures and other medicinal forms. So they're looking to us to try to find a way to provide local, naturally grown grape alcohol for use in the tincture so that they don't have to be concerned about people with celiac disease.
There's another exemption. There's a fairly long list of exemptions. There's 11 different specific exemptions. The fourth one is the use of alcoholic beverages by a licensed physician, druggist, or dental surgeon for medicinal or pharmaceutical purposes, or the use of alcoholic beverages by medical facilities established and maintained for treatment of patients addicted to the use of alcoholic drugs. There's also the use of ethyl alcohol for scientific, chemical, pharmaceutical, mechanical, and industrial purposes. So there, as long as this product is unfit for use as a beverage, that's another exemption.
Let me jump in here, Chuck, and just say, we don't really, you're giving us a hypothetical, and it would be probably wise for us to look at a specific question, but the exemptions are in the statute, and that's online and available for your listeners.
Well, Agnes, thanks for the insertion there of this additional point. The reason that I'm asking this question is that our organization specifically has been asked to produce grape-based alcohol as opposed to grain alcohol, okay? And I have contacted several local or regional distilleries with the idea of having my grapes from my vineyard, which are grown organically, biodynamically, naturally here. We're not certified, but there's no chemicals of any kind allowed on our property for our vineyard. But they've looked to us to see if we can find a way to have our grapes made into this special medicinal alcohol for exclusive use of the natural products industry here for producing tinctures. And as my understanding is, and talking to several of the local distilleries, the licensing that they have covers production of this for our use. But what I can't get a good answer to is how do we get it from the winery or the distillery to the people who are using it? And is there some sort of an exception on the taxes based upon the drinkable, consumable alcohol as opposed to medicinal? Because the tax rate right now is it's just ridiculously high coming out of California and Oregon that they're using now.
Well, you do understand that we have nothing to do with the tax.
I understand, but I'm just trying to find, from the permitting point of view and the transportation licensing sort of thing, just trying to understand better how we could do that with some local distilleries.
Well, I don't know that you really clarified your point as to really how these are being used. I think if you're wanting a legal answer to your question, this is the suggestion that we usually make to people in reference to something like this.
Okay.
Put it all in writing. That way we can do some research for you.
Okay.
And at that point, we'll give you, if it is something that we have oversight of, we will give you our opinion in reference to it. Obviously, if it's not lawful, we did not write the law.
Sure.
But we definitely, if you want to send me an email, I don't mind providing it to our legal department. Let them review it and see if there's something that we can assist you with that. But having a more or less a casual conversation about it in an interview is difficult to pinpoint because, again, like I said, I don't understand all the nuances that you're explaining to me. It's very easy for you to understand in your mind, but without a lot of clarification, I would dare not say, yes, this can be done, no, this can't be done, and how it can be done if it can be done. So, yeah, so definitely, if you want to send me an email with all the verbiage, I would have no problems in providing you a response.
Okay, that's fair enough, Bob. I'll do my best the next couple of days to draft an email to you that outlines the particulars as best as I understand them from where I'm sitting and where we are in the industry here, because this has some potential of creating some new business for us here in the mountains, and we just want to make sure that we know how it's done and if it can be done and what things we need to be aware of along the way. Because nobody here is interested in trying to get around the regulations or ignore them, anything like that. We just want to know what the process is as clear as we can so that we can do our best to adhere to them. So I'll make it a point to do that. And the same thing would apply to Grappa, which is the alcohol-based, you know, spirit distillery product, if you will, that comes from grapes. I'll put that in as a separate series of paragraphs.
Well, if that product is distilled, then it meets the distilled spirits, and it has to be done in a distillery.
Okay.
If it's only fermented like a regular wine, then, you know, it's most likely going to be a winery.
My thought is that it has to be under the distillery licensing process because it is a distilled product.
I would agree with that. If it's, like I said, if it's distilled, we have a separate permit for that. So does the federal government.
Bob, if you could give us, or Agnes, if you could give us your commercial for your organization, how can people reach you? How can we contact you? How would you suggest that anybody has questions reach your organization or you specifically?
Basically, you know, we are the North Carolina ABC Commission, and our contact phone number, our general contact phone number is 919-779-0700, and our general email address for those that do have email is contact@abc.nc.gov, and that's contact@abc.nc.gov. And obviously, we have several different divisions here. We have a permitting division, we have a legal division, we have an audit and investigation division, and we have ABC stores and pricing division. So we have a wealth of information here. We also, as I said, stated before, have a website for those that have availability. Its address is abc.nc.gov. We are here to help you with any of the questions that you have, and we welcome both emails and phone calls. We do have walk-in people with questions, and we will assist, obviously, when we can. Don't get frustrated if you call and you have to leave a voicemail, because we have many things going on across the state that we're trying to deal with at any one time. So if you have any problems with getting permitted, you know, we can work those out, generally speaking.
Folks, we've been talking with Bob Hamilton, the ABC Commission Administrator, and Agnes Stevens, Public Affairs Director for the North Carolina Alcoholic Beverage Control Commission in Raleigh, North Carolina. They have just given you some information on how to contact them and how to reach out to them if you have questions or encounter some problems you might want to get some help with. They've told you how to do it, so feel free to give them a call, send them an email, go out and visit. What's your physical address out there, Bob?
Our physical address is 400 East Tryon Road, Raleigh, North Carolina.
Well, Bob and Agnes, we certainly appreciate your taking time to be with us today. It'll certainly be beneficial to a lot of our listeners to help understand better this process that tends to frustrate some people and give us a little more better understanding of how to go about getting it done and getting it done right. So, again, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Chuck.
Okay, folks, we're going to call that a wrap for today's program.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!